This sound recording is protected through international copyright 2018, Dr. Cindy Mason and RadioAI.net. All rights reserved.
Radio AI.
Come on.
www.radioai.net.
Hey, cut it out. You're messing me up.
The public resource for artificial intelligence literacy by the people who do AI.
Hi, I'm Cindy Mason. I'm your host today on Radio AI. I've worked on AI and robotics at Stanford University, UC Berkeley, and NASA Ames. Radio AI is a public education program on artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence is predicted to become one of the most important technologies in our future. Today, we have a special podcast for you. It's an interview with Hans Thomas, live from the San Pedro Bay, where three robots and a team of researchers are preparing to launch for the next segment of their adventure as they explore the undersea environment. Hans is in charge of the undersea vehicles out of a research institute in Monterey, California, called MABARI, the Monterey Bay Aquarium Research Institute. And that's a mouthful. Well, Hans left on a boat with a big crane and a team of, I think, 12 people and three undersea robots. They will be at sea for about a month on this mission. And we happened to catch Hans when he was in the port of San Pedro off the coast here of California while they were restoring their supplies. And Hans is talking about what his robots are up to. They're actually mapping the seafloor near a location off California where they're taking a nuclear power plant offline. And they're trying to establish the quality of the seafloor and the ground there near the power plant so they can put up some windmills. Hans is going to be talking to us about how the robots navigate and what happens when they're at sea. Before we jump into the technical part of the podcast with Hans, I wanted to check in with the audience and find out how many of you are divers or have snorkeled and understand what it's like to be under the ocean or in the ocean and to hear it and smell it and feel it. And it's the environment that these robots and these researchers are operating in. So I'm going to play some sounds that are recorded from under the sea. And if you are a diver or a snorkeler, you will enjoy it. And if you've never been in a situation like that, you will find it very strange and unusual, like almost another planet, another world. And it really is. So let's play that now, and then we will get into the technical aspects of our podcast with Hans. That was the sound of the depth. I played this for you partly to create an understanding of the environment the robots are in, but also because in order to create undersea vehicles that can accomplish things, they're faced with a lot of different challenges than they are here on the surface of the Earth. First of all, it's wet, so the housing and the cables and everything has to function when it's wet and when it's under pressure, and there can be a number of challenges getting it in and out of the water, and the instruments that we need in order to find out what's left and right and the dimensions that you can move in. How do you do that? It's very different set of instruments, very different set of challenges from wheels or treads or even drones that fly. In fact, the challenges of undersea vehicles are more similar to what it takes to fly an airplane or a drone than it is robots on land.
Just to give you a little heads up before we talk to Hans,
I need to give you a little bit of a geek alert, okay? The talk is going to get a little bit nerdy.
Sometimes he will use words like accelerometer or Doppler effect or Doppler shift. He's talking about some of the sensors and instruments that are on board the undersea robot that it uses to guide itself in a certain direction or to get from one place on a map to another. In our cars, we use a GPS and we look at the map. But kind of like dolphins and other undersea creatures, they have to be able to detect how fast they're going. That's velocity. The rate of change in that speed. That is how fast they're speeding up or slowing down. That's called an accelerometer.
He also uses the word Doppler. A Doppler instrument on an undersea vehicle has a signal that it bounces off of an object at a distance, and it does this in order to determine the object's motion or its distance as it's moving. Sometimes you'll hear this term Doppler radar used in weather or to measure a baseball, the speed of a baseball, or sometimes in aviation. It's a tool that's used on board an undersea robot as well. It's a little bit like what some of the undersea creatures do. When we pick up with Hans, he's in the middle of talking about how the robots navigate, how they find the location to go to, and what it is they're actually doing when they're out in the ocean. I hope you find this as amazing as I do. Okay, here we go.
We're actually on the dock in San Pedro. We're in the harbor here. Yeah, we have two mapping vehicles that we're operating.
When you say mapping vehicle, they're autonomous undersea robots, or what are you?
Yeah, they look like big torpedoes.
So how do you drive those things? Do they have a map inside and they go by themselves, or?
They have an inertial navigation system inside at these, and they can measure their altitude over the bottom, and they're programmed to basically fly between latitude and longitude waypoints.
Like a GPS, they have like a GPS, except it's 3D?
Well, it's called an inertial navigation system. So this is a set of gyroscopes and accelerometers and a kind of sonar called a Doppler sonar that measures the speed of the vehicle over the bottom.
A Doppler sonar, that's sound, right?
Yeah, it's an acoustic system that measures the Doppler shift in four directions. So there are four beams that measure the along track and cross track velocity of the robot, and essentially use that like an odometer to perform dead reckoning.
What dead reckoning means, like where you're exactly at?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's like a dolphin or something.
The gyros to compute the heading and the pitch and the roll of the vehicle. We use the Doppler sonar to compute velocity. And then there are accelerometers that are integrated to get velocity and position. And those are also used to provide a fuller picture of the physics of the movement of the vehicle.
And an accelerometer is how fast you're going, and no, the rate of...
Well, how fast you're accelerating.
Oh, of course, okay. And then, is that kind of like what dolphins and whales, because dolphins and whales kind of have to move through space and know where they're at too, right? Everything in the ocean does.
Yeah, but most animals have some form of biomagnetic capability. You know, they can measure with different organs in their head. They can sort of measure magnetic heading, and then periodically they surface and I don't know. Then they have magic. Animals can do some amazing things in terms of navigation that we don't completely understand.
Wow. So what are you collecting data? Are you making a map, or what do you?
Yeah, we collect bathymetric data that measures the three-dimensional shape of the bottom, and then we have sonars that can image into the first 50, 75 meters of mud and give us essentially a backscatter image of what the sediments look like.
Ooh, you're measuring mud.
Yeah.
That sounds weird. Did the robots get dirty when they come up? Like, you put them down in the water with a crane? And then
we put them over the side with a crane and then run them around. But we try not to hit the bottom.
So you have telepresence? Are you guiding them at all? Or do they have their own?
They have their own onboard computer program that they run that they're deriving. That controls, you know, what their behavior is. So, you know, it's a lot like, you know, it's similar to like the indoor mobile robots that we used to drive around, except, it's running around in the ocean.
So can you see what they see? Do they have a camera on board and you can see it from the ship? Or
once we recover the vehicle, we can look at the data, but we really don't have the ability to look at much of the data in real time.
Oh, because it's too far away? Or
what's that?
Because is there a cable on the robot, or is it powered by itself?
It's powered by itself. It has batteries.
Ah, so there's no cable that carries a television signal or camera signal.
We have a robot like that on board that we'll be using in another 10 days or so as part of another mapping exercise. But right now we're just using these torpedoes to cruise around.
Torpedo. Is that what you call it? That sounds like...
That's what we call it.
Oh, no. Call it a sausage or something.
Sausage, okay.
An underwater hot dog. I don't know. What else was kind of curious about? So basically you're mapping. You're kind of mapping.
Yeah. It's all mapping work, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then does it ever get lost? How does it find its way back to the ship?
It usually doesn't get lost. It's programmed to run a very specific mission, and when the navigation system works, it's within meters of that track line. So we can track it from the ship. We have acoustic systems that let us follow it from the ship and know where it is. And then when it surfaces, it has radio beacons and strobes and other things on it that make it easy for us to find it. It has satellite positioning tags, so it can send us an email message saying this is
Whoa!
Where I'm at.
That's amazing. That is cool. Yeah. What boat are you on, or how many people are on the boat?
We carry 12. This trip will have 11 people on board, but we can carry a maximum of 12 people.
Wow. Where do they sleep?
We all have bunks. We have a deck full of bunks.
What kind of boat is it? Is it like a Coast Guard vessel? Or
the boat itself started out as an oil field supply boat, at what's called an OSV, or an offshore supply vessel. So it has a big back deck and a big house way up forward and a bunch of cranes on it and winches and robots and all that kind of stuff.
So you have winches, you got bunk beds, and do you have a ladder hanging off the back so you can get down in the water with the robot if you want?
I don't think we brought the dive ladder with us. Normally we don't go swimming with the robot. Sometimes we have had swim falls and go for swims, but for the most part we don't need to go into the water to recover the vehicle. We can reach over the side with the crane and we have a way of hooking into it, and then we pick it up, bring it back on board.
How long will you be at sea or on this mission?
This next leg will be 7 days, and we come back into port for 3 days to change out things and switch over to doing the ROV part, the robot with the cable, and then we'll be doing that for 10 days or so. So I've got like another 2 weeks.
Wow.
Kind of 2.5 weeks of screwing around.
And now, why are you guys doing this again? What was the reason for it?
Well, this trip is primarily looking at nearshore geologic structures like seismic faults and canyons that can pose potential hazards depending on how active they become.
So like this, for this, construction
for like... This trip is all focused on these near-shore geological hazards.
And the reason you're interested in that is not for the safety, but for construction of like wind farms or what?
I mean, in some cases, we are looking at things that could cause, you know, potentially catastrophic, you know, tsunami-like waves and things like that. The work off Morro Bay was more to understand the hazards that things might pose to, you know, the construction elements of this wind farm, as well as to understand the potential seafloor impacts of laying the cables and the anchors and the other things that they have to do to put the systems in place.
It sounds like it's getting windy there. Are you outside or?
Yeah, the wind. I had managed to find a lee, but the wind moved around on me a little bit.
Oh, okay. So when you put the wind farm out in Morro Bay, it's going to be out in the ocean. It's not going to be on land?
That's going to be out in the ocean.
Holy smokes.
It's an interesting concept. A lot of it's driven by the existing power line infrastructure that's there for the nuclear power plant. It gives them the ability to cheaply tie the energy from the wind farm into the grid, and also by the large amount of wind, the high wind levels that are present offshore there. So in a lot of respects, putting wind farms offshore is very expensive and in some cases doesn't make good economic sense. But, you know, for this particular wind farm, you know, they might be able to make the numbers work.
It sounds great. I love it. I love this project. Well, thank you.
You're doing good.
You've been listening to a special Radio AI podcast live from the San Pedro Bay, where three robots and a team of researchers are preparing to launch for the next segment of their adventure as they explore the undersea environment. This has been your host, Cindy Mason. Stay tuned for more Radio AI podcasts.